It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the French Connection this week. Patrick Béja, Miriam Jouard join us to talk about President Obama's speech on the NSA. What did he say? We'll also talk about that big court decision against the FCC. Is it the end of net neutrality? And Google buying Nest, what do they really want? It's all ahead next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT This Week in Tech, episode 441, recorded January 19th, 2014. French for Entrepreneur. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWiT. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet with coworkers and clients anywhere. Share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing. Even present from an iPad. Try it free for 30 days. No credit card needed. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the promo code TWIT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to Audible.com/TWIT2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID Audible_com. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere with a free app. Start your free trial at Carbonite.com. You don't need a credit card. Just use the offer code TWIT, and you'll get 2 bonus months with purchase. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show that covers the week's tech news. A little tough getting people on the show today because it turns out, I don't know, there's a football game going on or something like that. And John said, no, I can't. Nah. And on and on. But so what we figured out is, oh, if we get people who speak French, they won't care. So Miriam Jouard is here. Of course, we love Miriam. Hello. Longtime friend of the show. And she's currently working at Pebble, but before that and in Engadget, and is an expert on mobile communications. And from Montreal, right? Quebec. I know you're in the city now.
Have we lost him?
No, I'm talking to you.
Oh.
Me? No, I'm not Canadian. I mean, I'm a Canadian. I'm not French Canadian.
But you're French.
Yes, French. So from the south of France.
And oh, you're from the south of France.
Yeah, from like Nice, Cannes, Grasse.
Oh, beautiful area. Oh,
yeah,
I love
and then
it.
And then the Canadian part comes in with the English speaking, like Toronto.
Oh, I get it.
You know, the Vancouver. I spent a lot of time in both those cities.
Yeah. I did not realize
you don't say a boot.
Not as much anymore. You know, I think it's. I still have a bit of a French accent and a bit of a German because my mom is German.
Oh,
I speak German as well. And then I got possibly a little bit of Canadian, but I've lived in the U.S. for you know, pretty much like 12 years now. So I think the California English took over.
You sound French. You have a beautiful French accent,
mais
which
oui,
is very sexy.
Yeah,
I love it.
Cool.
Also,
you see, I can speak with the French accent if you want. Huh? From, and it's more sexy for your show. I can
it makes it. Me very hot. Also, from Paris, France, Patrick Béja, not Patrick, on the Twitter, and a multilingual podcaster and a regular also on the network. So thank you, both of you, for being here. This week, it's nice to have you both. Did either of you watch the president's address on Friday? I'm just curious. I wonder if there was great.
I didn't watch it, but I read about it.
Yeah, Patrick.
I heard about it too. I watched our own president's address, who had to sidestep questions about you know, his affairs and scooters and stuff like that. So that was very entertaining.
So in France, they're talking about his love life. And in the U.S., we're talking about our spying life. But they combine beautifully because we've been spying on his love life. So it's President Obama took to the podium to talk about, of course, the NSA spying. And did, in fact, say, you know what, we want to strike a balance between our surveillance policies and civil liberties. The NSA, of course, is collecting and has admitted to
I guess at this point it's accepted, has been collecting all the phone data of every call going on in the United States illegally.
All the things.
All the things. So he addressed that, saying not that the program would end, but that this actually worries me. The information that the NSA collects will no longer be held by the NSA, that they will have to go through the federal FISA court to get access to the material. So in other words, they have to go to a judge, say, this is what we want, this is why we want it. I don't know. Did he propose it?
No, he didn't propose anything. He just said, no. They're not going to be holding the data anymore.
Well, who are they going to give it to? Target? I mean, I don't understand why this is better.
Well, we don't know. We can only speculate. It's either, you know, the telecom companies that are going to hold them or a third party.
Oh, yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, that's going to be... but you know, the thing that irks me, that's my first rant of the show. There might be another one, but the thing that's really mind-boggling, there are two things. First, he talked about phone metadata, which is important for sure.
That's what they're collecting. They're collecting who's calling whom, when, exactly. Dropped calls, missed calls, wrong numbers. Apparently, they're collecting texts and other things as well, but mostly it's focusing not on content but on transactions.
Exactly.
And they're saying, so, I think somewhat disingenuously, it's just metadata. Don't worry about it. But everybody who's in our business knows that that data is extraordinarily valuable and, in fact, can tell them all sorts of stuff that invades our privacy.
Of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, he addressed this. He also said that there will be better representation of public interest on the FISA court. Which is important, but only in cases when new questions of new technology would arise. So when there's something new they haven't ruled on before, that there would be some public interest representation. So that's good as well, but it's not as good as having public representation, period. And he also reduced the number of hops for that metadata that you can validates your collection. So you can only now collect metadata on someone two connections away from the person you suspect is doing illegal activity. And before it was three hops. So that's a little bit better. But what was not addressed at all was the question of that really blew up was the question of PRISM and the NSA collecting data from, well, the internet. That was not even mentioned from what I understand.
This is the stuff they're getting from the telcos. The telcos say, we don't want to have to hold on to this. The president says that the attorney general and the director of national intelligence will have to come up with a plan by March 28th. Do remember that the law that authorizes this bulk collection, it is legal, expires next year. And pretty much everyone agrees that after the revelations of Edward Snowden, it's not going to get renewed. But there's the other side of this, which is that no one wants to be the person who said, in fact, it's interesting to watch members of the U.S. Congress talking about this on television this morning. Nobody wants to be the one who said, oh, let's stop collecting this. And then there's a terrorist attack.
Of course.
And they're on the hook for this. And that's why this is so difficult.
I don't know. I mean, it seems to me like basically Obama just, I don't think he really said anything, actually. I mean,
he's quite adept, I think, at doing that.
You know damn well that the NSA can do whatever they want.
Right.
Like, we have no proof whatsoever that they're not going to continue hanging on to this data and do anything. I have a hard time believing any of this. I think it's just a political move saying, we acknowledge that there's something going on that is bothering you, the people, and we're going to look into it and do something about it. But I really don't think, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think they're going to do anything about it.
And furthermore, it's also now clear that much of this information is shared with, for instance, the British GCHQ, and they have no restrictions on how they can use it.
Exactly. So,
and there's also, and the reason this is a tech story, besides the fact that it's about stuff happening on the internet, is that American technology companies are really devastated by this because no one wants to buy American gear anymore because the presumption is that it's just giving the spies a beachhead in your business. So it's really a disaster for Silicon Valley among all the other implications. This is a big story for technology, I think.
Sorry. Go ahead, Miriam.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I think I think if there's any good to come out of this, it's going to be that the very strong Silicon Valley companies are going to get together.
And finally, they have an enemy besides
maybe
each
lobby.
Other.
I mean, they have been kind of anti-law, and I hate lobbies. Okay? I just think the whole thing is screwed up. But this seems to be the way the government operates in the U.S. And so, perhaps they can lobby in another way. And this ties into the other big thing that's been going on, which is, I think is very big deal, is the net neutrality stuff.
Yes, we will get to that too, believe me. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about.
that will be probably my second.
I had a feeling that's what you were going to talk about.
Yeah. But, I'm not as cynical as you, Miriam. I think that the things that Obama did address were kind of addressed in the proper direction. Certainly he wasn't going to, let up on everything. What worries me is what he didn't talk about at all. And if you say, the NSA is going to be doing whatever they want anyway, then there's no point legislating anyway. So maybe I understand the feeling, but I think it might be a little bit extreme. That being said, supporting your view is that story that congressional reps had to ask Bruce Schneier,
what the NSA is
doing because the NSA won't tell them.
So Bruce Schneier, who's the greatest security blogger of them all, we just love everybody. He's been on the show. Everybody loves Bruce Schneier. Yeah. The Congress says, "Could you tell us? Because we don't." The NSA is not talking to us. That's really where the failure is. I recognize that in order to be secure, we need to do something. I mean, after 9/11, there was absolutely a mandate from the American people as well as the government for these spy agencies to get going and protect us from future attacks. And I understand the need for that. Of course, the acknowledgement was we can't tell the American people what we're doing, but but by law, we need to tell Congress, we need to inform Congress, and they need to, on behalf of the American people, have oversight of what we're doing. And that's where it's really fallen apart. There is no oversight. And there has to be a way to balance the safety. Now, I admit this is a very American point of view. It's one of the reasons I like having you guys on this show, is that from the very American point of view, we want to protect ourselves against terrorist attacks, but, ask Chancellor Merkel of Germany how she feels about it, because in that process, we're listening in on her cell phone calls.
That was interesting. One of the other things he said was, we're going to stop listening to foreign leaders.
Which, about time! Yeah,
all right. But he also said that non-U.S. persons would be afforded the same rights as U.S. persons, which, apparently they're spying on Americans anyway, so I'm not sure what that does.
You get the same right to be spied on. Congratulations. Yeah, exactly.
But I wonder if I'm going to try and get out of my comfort zone or my camp for a second. And is there a chance that these things, all this spying, is actually getting them results and they have stopped attacks and they actually can't communicate on that? And, Obama did say success goes unmentioned and failure could be catastrophic. And the success goes unmentioned is kind of important there. It's obvious, but maybe they are actually... They see the results of these actions and they just can't talk about it. And maybe in 50 years, we're going to have declassified documents that are going to show that, three attacks were stopped in the last 10 years. And Obama is seeing those things and he has to just take it and take the public opinion being very much against him and saying, we have to do it. And that's the way it is.
Did François Hollande in his press conference, did the Prime Minister of France talk at all about this and about the U.S. spying on France and what his reaction is?
I honestly can't remember. I'm not sure he's
busy with his own scandal.
No, well, obviously he tried to do. He's busy with his approval rating, which is the lowest that anyone has ever had in the country.
Oh my
it
God.
Was in the 15, the teens, and now it's a little bit above. But he's trying to get the economy back up.
Right.
But yeah, it did make a little bit of a stink, but it's sort of forgotten now, especially because the government had to pass a set of laws which were controversial in their own right in France, and that were kind of in the same vein as what we've seen in the U.S. So I don't think he wants to bring too much attention to that again.
Well, he must be gratified by the fact that we've decided not to spy on him anymore.
That, yeah, I'm sure he is.
Jeez Louise.
So maybe there's one last thing I wanted to mention on this topic, and it's sort of the contradiction of them and them. You know, it's the forever them, they, basically the government and the NSA saying what Snowden did was wrong. And we are not doing anything wrong. And now, obviously, Obama had to announce some pretty a number of changes because of these revelations. So I'm wondering how they can hold that dichotomy in their arguments of, you know, if actually he did reveal secrets, that if what he revealed was not, there wasn't anything wrong in this, why are then they now changing it to much acclaim? That's something that I haven't seen addressed anywhere, which
Snowden is a traitor. We don't want to talk about this. We did nothing wrong to, okay, we should talk about this. Yes, we did something wrong, but Snowden, he's still a traitor.
Yeah. Well, see, my biggest problem, my whole approach on this is that perhaps if we didn't go out there, fight wars and piss people off, they wouldn't try to terrorize us. And then we wouldn't to do all this.
That's a much larger conversation about why terrorism happens.
My point is right now the NSA is doing stuff against U.S. citizens, Canadians and French people like me and Patrick and like people all over the world that are just completely insane. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the big hacker conference that takes place between
RSA is
New Year's every year in Germany. And this year was in Hamburg. And I watched Jacob Applebaum's talk for an hour. And it's very technical, but it outlines some of the crazy ass malware and other virus-like activity that the NSA is putting into people's computers, sometimes at the hardware level. And to me, that is just unacceptable. Like, that is just goes beyond. I mean, as you said earlier, it threatens our economy. And, you know, I still believe in competition. I still believe in people making money. And I think that this is a big issue. This is a much bigger issue, I think, than maybe we got some results, you know?
Applebaum was talking at the Chaos Computer Conference about all of these NSA ant spying things. Der Spiegel then did the full article, and we've talked about that quite a bit. 50-page catalog of things you can buy.
That's insane.
From the NSA.
But you know, that's,
don't bother me as much, Miriam, because those are targeted.
Yeah, me neither. Exactly.
We want to find out what this bad guy's up to, so we have a technology. Now, admittedly.
But how do you know they don't use that against people that you. Well, you how do you know you're not targeted?
Of course, but you never know. That's always, you know, since James Bond has been using little microphone pens, you've never known if he wasn't using to spy on people he shouldn't be spying on.
I mean, there's two different arguments there. One is that we shouldn't be doing any of this at all. And I think that's an extreme that a lot of Americans wouldn't support. They want to be protected a little bit. So they don't want to take away all of law enforcement's tools. In fact, we're happy that law enforcement has some tools. So if there is an Al-Qaeda operative in the United States, we can capture him. But on the other hand, the NSA has gone far beyond that to collect data about every single American citizen, well beyond what their charter allows them to do. And I don't think there's any argument that that's going too far. So, you know, you can argue, Miriam, we shouldn't, you know, we've created terrorist states, and I certainly can make that argument. At this point, we got some bad guys out there, bad actors. They're not going away. I don't know.
Sure.
You know,
I agree with you. But what I'm saying is that I'm concerned that the NSA is actually actively withholding bugs in commercial code, backdoors
We know that.
Right.
The conference I thought you were talking about, the RSA conference is coming up. A lot of people have said we're not going to the RSA conference because it was revealed that the NSA paid RSA $10 million to put subverted encryption code out for and recommend it. code that gives a backdoor to the NSA. So you're absolutely right.
I mean, the kind of problems I have. Like, this is, you know, to me, it's like it's a technology problem. It's not just a political problem. It's that we have technologies being screwed with, basically. By that, Silicon Valley and the entrepreneurship and the capitalism that happens around technology is being screwed with by this majorly, I think.
Well, that's the blowback, and there's and that's, of course, you ask Google, Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, all these companies, that and Cisco. a lot of the targets of these ANT protocols were Cisco routers. There's blowback. It really, really hurts us. But I don't think the answer is completely obvious, or do you?
No, I don't.
I think it's difficult.
The one thing I will say is that on the topic of Americans going to war and pissing people off, my country, having been a recipient of the Americans' help, I will probably abstain from commenting on it.
Yeah, I mean, we're all pretty guilty on the Western world pretty much right now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so hard. I don't really know what the answer is. Let's talk about the rules of the road for the internet and net neutrality. Some people this week said it's dead. Well, maybe not. We'll find out about that, and we'll give Patrick a chance to rail on over there.
Yes.
Google buys Nest. AOL kills Patch. A big firing at Yahoo. Lots more to talk about in just a little bit. We've got a great cast of non-football lovers on the show today. Miriam Joar from Pebble. Get Pebble.com. And are you going to Mobile World Congress? I bet you are.
Yes, I am. I'm not quite sure exactly what I'm doing yet, but there's some stuff up in the air. So
come on and help us cover that.
Are you going to go? Or
no, I've always, every year I say this event in Barcelona, which is coming up in a month, is the place now where all the phone, like the Galaxy S5 will probably be announced there, all the new phones. And it really has become the show. Plus, it's in Barcelona. But maybe we'll send Mike Elgin. I can't go. I wish I could. I'd love to. But if you're going to be there, well, please call us and tell us what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Be our eyes and ears at the Mobile World Congress. Patrick, do you go? I mean, it's just down the road a piece.
No, it's really, I mean, those big shows, it's so much walking, and you can see everything on the internet anyway.
So. I didn't go to CES, so I understand. Yeah. I'm a believer, but this one seems more fun.
Mobile Congress is more about business.
Yeah.
You know, you go there to discuss partnerships, to work out deals. All the big deals you see happening later in the year are gelled at Mobile Congress.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's why it's very important to be there, because you kind of hear some interesting stories and rumors and see and meet some interesting people. I when I was at Engadget, obviously, you know, there are news, but nobody's launching big things anymore. You know, they launch kind of second tier things at Mobile Congress. Mm. All the big tier devices are now, the first tier devices are launched separately with their own events. You know, there'll be an event for the Galaxy S5
right.
at some point,
right.
and HTC will have something for their phone, etc. I think where Mobile Congress shines is, you know, like, if you're a company like us, Pebble, and you want to, you know, have discussions and meetings with people, this is where you want to be, because this is where everybody is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the big I agree with you. Trade shows now are not as appealing to the big companies. Apple left, Microsoft left CES because they can do it themselves. What do they need? They don't want to be in the mass of announcements. They want to have their own attention. But we'll talk about that. In fact, I haven't asked you guys. I'd love to know what you thought of CES. But before we do that, let's talk about getting out of the post office. Why should you be going to the post office? You know, postage rates are going up. That means there's going to be a traffic jam. Everybody's going to go to buy stamps, except for you, because you don't need to buy stamps because you print your own stamps. That doesn't even sound legal, but it is. It's not. We're talking about stamps.com. You literally can buy, print, and use legal U.S. postage with your computer, your printer. You don't need a special postage meter or special ink. You just need stamps.com. It's not just buying postage, though. Stamps.com does everything you'd need to do at the post office right from your desk. The rates are automatically updated. I've been told that some postage meters charge you to update the rates. I don't know how they get away with this. Not Stamps.com. You never have to go to the post office. They were just included, by the way, congratulations, in Software Magazine's annual 500 list, top software companies. Stamps.com, we've been using it here for years to print our own postage, to print right on the envelopes. So if you do mail out bills or flyers at your business, It'll take the data from your QuickBooks or from your address book, automatically add the return address, your company logo, and the postage, print it right on the envelope. If you're mailing packages, use that USB scale. It's awesome. You plop the package on there, automatically prints the mailing label. If you sell on Etsy or eBay or Amazon or PayPal or any of those sites, Stamps.com will do all your printouts for you automatically. It pulls the address from the website. It'll, even if you're using a Priority Mail or Express Mail, it'll send out a confirmation email to the recipient automatically. It is true fulfillment, turns you into a fulfillment house. Now, if you visit Stamps.com, you'll see an $80 no-risk trial on the front page, but don't do that. Click the microphone that's on the upper right-hand corner and use our offer code TWIT, T-W-I-T, and instead you'll get a $110 bonus value, including $55 in free postage you can use over the first few months of your account. We'll send you that digital scale. You just pay shipping and handling. I think it's like $5. There's a $5 supply kit to make up for that. And, of course, a four-week free trial of Stamps.com. Stamps.com. Use the offer code TWIT and stop going to the post office today. What did you think, guys? Did you see anything at CES that was of any interest? Were you there for Pebble? Because Pebble made the Steel announcement there, right?
Well, you know, that's what my thing was. Yeah. I was very busy with pimping Pebble and Pebble Steel.
So how is that for you? Because last year you went as Engadget, so you were covering everything. This year, did you have to stay at the Pebble booth?
No, we didn't have a booth. We had a suite with invitation-only kind of thing. We obviously briefed the big media, the big important ones, you know, it's hard to – that's one thing I discovered. It's hard to pick and choose who you can brief ahead of time, right, ahead of your launch, because you only have so much time and so many time slots to do so.
So how do you do that? Because, I mean, I do see some discrepancies. A lot of times new media like us or websites don't get – the attention that old media like Wall Street Journal or USA Today gets. I'm sure you're more savvy than that in that respect.
I've been I tried to prioritize the ones that I know will have the most impact.
That's the key, isn't it?
Directly. And then, yeah, you know, immediately after the announcement, we, you know, so there were kind of three tiers, you know, the people we briefed ahead of time, the people that got an embargo but didn't get briefed, and then the people who got it afterwards. And afterwards meant that a lot of people just kind of reached out to us and say, hey, we want to take pictures and see it and play with it. And so I had to kind of like from Monday onward, basically accommodate all these folks till Friday. It was a lot of work. It was very exciting.
It's got to be a very different experience of CES, though. You flipped sides.
Yeah, it was. But you know what's cool is that I still got invited to a lot of the press conferences, and I managed to actually go to one of them. I didn't just had enough time for one. And it was the T-Mobile press conference, which I live tweeted.
Boy, John Legere, what a character
right,
he is.
I know. I mean, the guy is amazing. So I live tweet. I had a DSLR plugged into my laptop, and I would take pictures, and they would go get resized and watermarked and sent out to the internet on Twitter live. And basically, between me and The Verge, we became the two live feeds of T-Mobile's press conference, because people really loved it, apparently. I know we weren't the only ones live blogging, but apparently they liked our pictures the most. So that was a very rewarding experience. I got to play journalist for a bit. And I got to get John Ledger say to me live on stage that I could have anything I wanted. So I'm going to take him up on this somehow now, right?
Did he say, Miriam Jouar, you can have anything you want?
So, well, no, what happened was, you know, it was my birthday that day, and he wished me happy birthday before the press conference. And at the press conference, I was the first person to ask a question at the Q&A. And I said to him, all this is fantastic, but I've been a T-Mobile customer since the VoiceStream days. So what kind of awesome, you know, thing can you do for me? Like, obviously I'm very happy, but like, you're making a lot of people switch now, and what do you have in store for me? And he answered you know, the question, and then at the end he says, besides, you know, for you can have anything you want. So I was like, now I need to try to take him up on this, because he said it live.
He's
stage.
So he was the CEO, I think, of Global Crossing, button down, crew cut practically, and all of a sudden he's like the anti-CEO. He's got long hair. He's got a mullet, for crying out loud.
And a leather jacket.
They actually, the Washington Post said basically he's become a troll.
He totally trolls other CEOs.
He trolls the other CEOs.
That's awesome.
On Wednesday at CES, he was wearing a T-shirt that talked about him. He crashed the AT&T event. Uh-huh. and had to get and got thrown out. Is this an act he's playing, or is this the real John Ledger? By the way, I pronounce it Leger, but it's,
you know,
Ledger.
Me too. I always said Leger, and now I have to correct myself because I actually heard him say his own name.
Yeah,
it's Ledger.
Yeah.
So
he has the T-shirt that says, "I just wanted to hear Macklemore."
Yeah. That's awesome. I mean, he's very savvy at marketing, basically. You know, he took the opportunity. I'm pretty sure he crashed this on purpose for for the publicity.
He wanted to get thrown out.
He was invited by Macklemore's agent. So it's not like he was there just crashing it. He was actually legitimately there. And I don't think AT&T handled that very well.
No.
I mean, come on. Seriously, this is how you deal with competition. You're all friends and, you know, you make the best of it. I'm sure he was well behaved.
He tweets. Is it him, do you think, that's tweeting?
Oh, yeah.
It's not his people?
Yeah, he's
real.
He's also obsessed with Batman. Do you know this?
No.
No, seriously. He's completely obsessed with Batman. So
that would explain his Twitter background.
T-Mobile making fun of other carriers and Batman when you read his Twitter feed. Yeah.
This has to be him. This can't be any corporate shill because it's just
seriously.
It's too real.
I think the guy just decided, you know what? Let's go. Let's roll with this and see how far we can go. And it's working, you know. So that was a big deal. Like the Macklemore, you know, him getting kicked out of AT&T and then the press conference. So I'm glad I was able to attend as a journalist for that. And then the other big deal was, you know, the guy walking off on stage at the Samsung conference.
Michael Bay.
So this is what CS has come down to now. You know, screw the technology. It's all about, you know,
it's a circus. Yes, circus. It's been a circus for a long time. Yeah, I'd agree. Patrick, you didn't go to CES, did you?
No, I didn't. But I mean, I have to say CES has not been super exciting for a long time. But I think this time was a little bit more. I mean, except for the Michael Bay thing, which was both hilarious and super cringeworthy at the same time. But apart from that, there were a few things that were. I couldn't say what specifically, but the Internet of Things and wearable computing seemed like they were getting a little bit more real and a little bit more accessible. We're not quite there yet, but I think this CES was really the time where we're starting to see that this is not just a sort of buzzword that dies after a couple of months.
That's probably the one thing Comdex before CES and now CES, the big trade shows are good for, is seeing the manifestation. I remember, you know, convergence was the watchword for 10 years. And finally, you started to see it at CES a few years ago with a convergence of digital technology and television and Hollywood. The idea of tablets. You first saw tablets in CES at Comdex 10 years ago with Microsoft, and it slowly evolved. And you could see that happening. And you knew when it was really taking off because it became the issue. E-book readers at CES 3 years ago, everybody had an e-book reader. So this year it's wearable tech, and you're in good position for that. Miriam, it's wearable tech and the Internet of Things, and
it seems so. And obviously the it's probably going to keep evolving, and the things that we're going to be if it actually takes off, the things that we're going to be seeing in 2-3 years are probably going to be a little bit different from what we're seeing at CES. But just in the same way that the actual tablets we're all using now are different from the ones that we were seeing 10 years ago, so. I think, you know, and also there were a bunch of French companies that were doing some, that were presenting things, you know, essential Internet of Things items like the connected toothbrush. And
there's a lot of that crap. There is a lot of that stuff.
There are things like
that's kind of the point I'm making is you don't see, you just can see that it's going to happen because everybody's throwing stuff up against the wall. That are in most cases dumb and stupid. Like, remember the Kobo and all those readers we saw a few years ago? But you knew, well, this must be a big thing because everybody's trying it. And everybody had watches, internet connected, everything. Refrigerators.
There's one that was actually pretty interesting in the concept. A friend of mine, another French podcaster, alerted me to it. It's called Mother by a company called Sense. It's a French company as well. The guys who did the Navastag connected.
Oh yeah, I like the Navastag. That was fun. Yeah.
And so it's a base station with, I can't remember, like maybe up to 20 little sensors that are, they're called cookies. They're tiny sensors, very flat and like this, they're colored. And you can put them in, and use them anywhere. And they're going to be interpreting the data depending on where you put them. So you could put one in your kid's backpack and you know where they are. You could put one, for example, on your fridge door. And you would know how many times things are being opened, or on your coffee machine, and it knows how many times you've had coffee. And then you also have one, for example, under your bed, so it knows if you sleep well or not. And then it can correlate the data and tell you, you know what, these 5 days over the last month where you didn't sleep very well, you also had a coffee 2 hours before you went to sleep. Hmm. So now, obviously, that's an obvious one. But, you know, that it's the kind of self... I can't remember the word, sorry.
Quantified self, we call it.
Quantified self, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. That's cool.
And by having all of that data, we can learn more about everything we do and maybe make
do
it
Do I have
better.
To eat so- one of them for it to know what I...
You can try. I'm sure you can try.
My takeaway from CS was it's always nice to see people in person.
And yes,
for that alone,
really
trade shows
about.
Are really awesome.
That's exactly what it's really
And then
about.
The other thing was, you know, I mean, I feel the same way as you that didn't really see anything that blew my mind. I mean, it was obviously a very good CS for us, but I worked really hard to make that happen. And then, you know, the TVs, those curved TVs are pretty gorgeous. I mean, you know, of course, I'm very expensive. They always start out very expensive, but
you know,
eventually
I have
they
one.
Trickle down.
You know, I own one.
You have a curved one?
I have the curved Samsung OLED.
Oh my goodness.
But now Samsung, see, now I need a new one because Samsung announced at the show one that you can uncurve with a remote control.
Ooh. Yeah,
that's just
stuff.
Stupid. You press a button, it goes.
It's a party trick.
It's yeah. You know, it's all about unique. Impressing your neighbors. That's all it's yeah. all about. When people come in the house, they go, "Ooh, your TV's curved." And I go, "Yes."
I was very excited. I went to the show floor for about, half an hour. It's about the amount of time I spent on the show floor. And they had this, at the LG booth, this gigantic washing machine, fake washing machine.
Yeah.
And everybody was getting their picture taken in front of it. That was the shit. That's how excited I got about things at CS.
What?
I know.
Why?
The giant washing machine?
Because it looked like, you know, they were trying to sell some kind of smart washing machine, connected washing machine or whatever. And they had this gigantic one where you could basically, it was an
Crazy.
Invitation to make fun
Crazy.
Of things.
So what do you, like, what do you, so the big, the really the big story didn't happen at CES was Google buying the Nest company.
Right. Yes.
Tony Fadell, of course, former Apple vice president who oversaw the production of the iPod. People say he designed the iPod. He did not design the iPod. However, he hired about 100 great designers from Apple and other places. The Nest is beautiful. It's got intelligence. It knows when you're home. It has on the Wi-Fi, so it can also tell what the weather is. And it's supposedly smartly conditions your home heat or cold. I had one. I didn't bother reinstalling it when we moved because it's like a big deal. And then now they do a talking smoke detector that goes, "I'm in here." I don't know what it says. Your battery is low. You go, or you can look on your iPhone and it'll say, "Hey, there was no fire last night." Oh, that's good news. It's an interesting company. I don't know if it's worth 5.8% of Google's total cash position, $3.2 billion. Why?
Well, here's my theory.
Okay.
Do you want my theory?
I want to know why Google bought
Honeywell,
Nest.
Honeywell, the big traditional thermostat and fire detector maker, was about to sue them.
Yes.
For a lot.
Yes.
And somebody thought, "Hey, look, we can have a whole bunch of cool patents." And you know, there you go. That's my theory.
So, you know, it's interesting because Google paid half as much for YouTube, $1.6 billion.
And at the time, we thought it was insane. Remember
at that,
that
time, it seemed nuts. And YouTube was about everything. To get sued out of existence, remember? I mean, there was some question whether YouTube could continue because they were really raising the ire of content creators. Having Google, I think one of the reasons they sold is because Google. You got to think that there's some relationship there that Tony Fadell getting sued or threatened lawsuits from not just Honeywell but First Alert and others, I think, was a little nervous about the future. And as Tony said, Google can get – I completely understand why Tony Fadell took $3.2 billion. That's not a question mark. But what is Google planning? Are they planning to make a big connected home initiative?
Well, it goes back to this mother possible. Announcement, right? Like that it's like you have sensors all over the house. They give you data. Google wants more data. They want to know more about you, right?
Well, they know when you are sleeping. They know when you are awake.
Well, so it seems pretty clear that the next, well, one of the next directions that all of this computers everywhere thing is going to take is the Internet of Things, as we were discussing just now.
Does it solve a problem, though, or is it just a lot of crap?
Well, it's you mean the Internet of Things in general?
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know yet, but there is a possibility. Everything seems to be going in that direction, and it seems like it could bring a lot.
You know what happens, though?
Intelligence.
We here in the tech industry say, well, everything's going in that direction. Let's follow that train. And then consumers go, yeah, I don't think so.
That's possible. But on the other hand, Nest is doing pretty well. And what they know how to do is design in that area, in that industry. And Google is getting better at design all the time, as is now famous. Google, you know that phrase, Google is getting better at design quicker than Apple is getting better at the internet.
And they're
getting better very, very fast. And the thing is, the Nest appliances, and maybe they had others on the drawing board, but the Nest appliances are extremely well designed. And as everyone knows, design is not just the way it looks, but the way it works. And they are doing extremely well in that area. So it might be that exactly in the same way that they bought YouTube, they could feel that something was going to happen there. And they were thinking, you know what? Let's get these guys. Let's give them the free range to do the things they want to do. And this is obviously going to become something. So we have a head start. And on top of it, they can help with the design of other Google products in general, which is not a bad thing either. So I don't know if the price is right, but I certainly understand why they would want to buy a company like this.
I agree with Patrick. I mean, it's obvious to me that they have all this design and hardware manufacturing expertise, and Google definitely wants more of that. And then, of course, you know, the patents, the data, and they were Google Ventures. You know, they had already invested in it.
Right.
And, you know, you don't want to see something you've invested into that's doing well that can return you a lot of data and a lot of perks, like the ability to do hardware and good design, and have that, you know, bogged down by some gigantic lawsuit that they can't afford to fight. Right. So I think to me that makes sense.
It could have been a white knight. You're saying they swooped in to save them.
I think so.
Yeah.
And partially as part of the story. But I think what was more interesting to me is the reaction of this acquisition to this acquisition by the media and people
thought it was Google spying on us.
Are you kidding me? Like,
Google has a little red eye now in the living room.
There's a potential for this to happen, but do you really think it's that big of a deal that Google can, in fact, that Nest already has access to things like your temperature over time in your house, when your furnace kicked in and out? And you know, other stuff with the fire detector. I mean, seriously, like,
well, that's a lot of data.
Like, you've
for
already
Google
signed
have,
your life
but,
away.
But I yeah, mean, exactly. That's the thing. Like, if you're worried about Google spying on you, then you probably should be worried about Google spying on you already.
Stop
it's
using Facebook,
Nest.
Okay?
So I had a Nest, and you get a Nest Energy report, which is kind of cool, that tells you, stuff, not useful stuff, but stuff. For instance, all Nest thermostat schedules have saved, they say, 1.4 billion kilowatt hours. That's enough energy to power all the tablets in the U.S. for a year. I haven't used my Nest in a while. Let me go back and look at an older Nest Energy report, because I didn't reinstall it. This shows you this month you use 2 hours more than last month. Wow.
So you know what?
Wow.
This is not incredibly interesting or useful information. But once everything becomes data, and Google can study it and get you some value out of it, it can become interesting. It's easy to make fun of it now, but when the home becomes, let's create a new buzzword, when the home becomes the quantified home And when everything is quantified, then I'm sure you can, well, I'm speculating, but I'm sure you can extract value out of it. For
there's
you
some
for
data. I don't feel like it's a privacy invasion. And I mean, does Google really care when I'm home and when I'm not home? I don't know. It doesn't. I but you're right. That became overreact. The story, though, Miriam. It definitely
and,
became
and
the
they're
story.
Overreacting. It's silly.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's move along. Oh, by the way, in July, I earned 31 Leafs. That's a leaf a day. That put me in the top 5% of nesters. And I've earned in the year 2006, 206 Leafs. I don't know what a leaf is.
What can you exchange them for Bitcoin?
Nothing. No.
Oh,
now that's an idea. Well, I wouldn't mind that. By the way, good news. People with piercings and tattoos can now work in the T-Mobile store. You must be pretty happy about that, Miriam. If this Pebble
thing... Yeah, well, you know, it's actually... I have something interesting to say about that. When I first moved to the West Coast from Toronto to Vancouver, it was like the mid-90s. And it was in a time when, you know, body modification was starting to become a big thing, I guess. I remember for a while there, you couldn't get a job if you had a tattoo or a piercing, right? And Seattle was really the first place that changed that. Eventually, they got to a point where somebody told me that eventually they got to a point in the late 90s where so many people had tattoos and piercing, they couldn't find anybody to do the job, like work at the cashier at QFC.
So they just had to break down and do it.
So they had to break down and accept it. And I remember noticing that really obviously when I first visited Seattle in the late 90s, and eventually I lived in Seattle. And, you know, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, actually, what surprises me about this T-Mobile thing is that you mean just only now this is happening? You know?
So you go in, you've got a piercing. They go, sorry, we can't use you. Oh, that's it's changed. Like, but, you know, I'm reading Brad's...
Don needs a tattoo now.
I'm reading Brad Stone's book about Amazon, which is great, The Everything Store. And it says one of the things Jeff Bezos did is he, when they were hiring people for the fulfillment centers in 98, I guess this was, he told the temp agencies, send me all your tattooed, pierced people, all the people who can't get jobs. I will use them in the fulfillment center. So he might have been one of the reasons Seattle started to open up for that, is that people could get work. So credit Jeff Bezos with that, of all people.
Good.
We're going to come back in just a bit and talk more. I guess the FCC net neutrality issue will be our next topic. So prepare your rant. Get the blood pressure up. Start. Hold your breath. Blow out. Our show today brought to you by GoToMeeting. If you have a client that is holding his breath while you pitch him, GoToMeeting is very useful. GoToMeeting is the best way to meet online, not just with clients, with coworkers, anywhere in the world. You can share the same screen. You can see each other face-to-face with HD video. I got to tell you, you know, GoToMeeting is a great way, just one use case. If you're pitching somebody and you've got a PowerPoint presentation, they can see your presentation. They can hear you, of course, because you get a free conference call line with it and everything. It's part of the deal. But they can also see you. But more importantly, you can see them. And I'll tell you, if you're pitching somebody, the body language, the reaction you're getting really is important stuff. You don't want to leave that out. It's great if you're, you know, have coworkers all over the world, as we all do now. I know teams that keep GoToMeeting running all day because you pay one low flat rate for as many meetings as you want, as long as you want. So it's very economical. You'll increase productivity. You'll improve communication. You'll eliminate wasted business travel. It's nice not to have to do that. GoToMeeting, you can even use it on a mobile device. You can present from an iPad. You sign up for GoToMeeting on your computer or mobile device right now by visiting GoToMeeting.com. Start the new year right with a free 30-day trial. No credit card needed. That's nice. Just sign up. GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Please, if you would, use our offer code TWIT. You have to click that link that says have a promo code and put in TWIT. That way they'll know you heard it about it on This Week in Tech. Go to meeting from Citrix. They just make it better and better all the time. Really great way to present, to meet, to collaborate online. So this is a kind of a complicated story and I think a little bit misrepresented. A federal appeals court told the FCC that Verizon had sued them, saying the FCC cannot enforce net neutrality, and the court said yes. But what the I think, you know, all the headlines were the end of net neutrality. It's over. Net neutrality is dead. And I think it was more nuanced than this. But Patrick, you say you have a rant. Well, so let's hear it.
Patrick rant.
My rant is about a little bit the result, probably, of the judgment. So maybe you want to explain how it all went down.
Yeah. So a federal appeals court. There's a good example. What is that? The Verge. Yeah. The wrong words. How the FCC lost net neutrality and could kill the internet.
Well, okay, so the headline's a bit sensational, but I think Neelai's article is dead on. It really. Yeah.
Well, he's a lawyer, so
it showcases what happened and how it went wrong, and the risk is certainly net neutrality is at a risk, but I wouldn't be quite as spectacular in my headline. But hey.
So, and this goes back, frankly, to the previous chairman. The current chairman, I'm not convinced, is a fan of net neutrality either. Tom Wheeler is a former lobbyist for the cable industry. The previous chairman, Julius Genachowski, an Obama appointee, apparently made a tactical mistake. They did not classify broadband providers as common carriers. A common carrier is somebody that just passes information through the internet without preference. The court said that since you haven't declared these broadband providers as common carriers, you have no jurisdiction. The FCC does not regulate, and so you cannot enforce these rules. In fact, the judge writing the opinion said, net neutrality is right. These are the right rules, but we cannot, you know, the law is very clear. Judge David Tittel said, the FCC should have some authority to regulate service providers, but until you say that they're a common carrier, Congress has not given you that power. And in fact, that's Verizon, basically was Verizon's argument. This has to be regulated by Congress. Congress did not delegate that power to the FCC. The judge wrote, quote, the commission has adequately supported and explained its conclusion that absent rules such as those set forth in the Open Internet Order, the net neutrality rules, broadband providers represent a threat to internet openness and could act in ways that would ultimately inhibit the speed and extent of future broadband deployment. The judge even said the broadband companies have a lot of financial incentive to discriminate on the internet. But, the FCC doesn't have jurisdiction here, and so they can't stop it. So what that means is you basically, I don't think it's the end of the internet or end of net neutrality, but that merely the FCC does not have the right to regulate it. Congress does. Now, I think if you care about this, and you should, because we're already seeing AT&T propose, you know, things that absolutely are violate net neutrality, then you should go to your member of Congress and say, we need either to give the FCC this power or, you need to assert this and adopt this open internet order and enforce it.
So in the current situation, there are probably a couple of things that can happen. I think in order to prevent the nightmare scenario that a lot of people are putting forth after this decision, first, the FCC could go could try to reclassify. The French word is coming to be the internet providers and make them classify them as common carriers. They didn't do that in 2002, as Neelai Patel's article explained, and that was probably a little bit of they didn't want to fight what would have been a huge fight, but if they want to do it now, it's going to be an even bigger fight. And it's probably it's going to be extremely difficult at least. The other thing that could happen is that they could go on a case-by-case basis. If things go bad and if some of the service providers start doing deals that are really hurting the internet and the public interest, then they could regulate on specific instances that has not been prevented. So either of those things could safeguard the internet as we know it. My strong reaction was to the arguments that came out after that decision was made from a lot of people who were saying, actually, we don't want the FCC to regulate the internet. It's one of those, I don't want the government in my regulating things because the government can't do anything. So first of all, the court said, actually, the argument is valid. There is a danger there, and it probably should be regulated. So that's the first point. And the second point is, it always irks me significantly when people say, we don't want X to regulate Y. Because some things do need to get to be regulated. You need to regulate, you know, the roads need to be regulated. You can't do just anything you want on the roads because there is a public interest in making sure that things go well when you're in your car. And in my opinion, I think in everyone who's listening here's opinion, the internet is a public utility. There's very little question about this. It's the same as electricity or running water or it's infrastructure. There's no question about this. And this for infrastructure, we need to make sure that not everything goes. So there's, you know, the words socialism come up very often, and that might be taking it a little bit too far maybe. But I come from a continent where you have some countries which are socialist and which where things work really well. So it's the kind of absolutism where you decide that regulation is bad everywhere, and that's really for political gain. It's a political agenda. And some things shouldn't be regulated, I absolutely agree, but some things should be regulated. And the internet is clearly a thing that needs to be safeguarded.
Yeah, but you're a French person.
Yes.
Do you want the American government to regulate the internet?
They've been doing a fine job until now.
I'll tell you what, let's get Denise Howell on the line. They did a very good, I thought This Week in Law did a very good discussion on Monday of this decision. And having a lawyer who understands these issues on, I think, might be beneficial to us here. I don't know. Sure. We're going to try to get her on via audio. She can give us just a few minutes. Are you there, Denise? No. Okay. Chad's going to get her on. That's part of the debate, by the way. And it's not a minor part of the debate is, do you really want a government, any government, regulating the internet? Rats. We're going to try to get Denise. Denise, get on the line.
So there's a key point there. It's really not about it, when you say it like this, it makes it sound like they're going to go in and decide who can do what and who can, you know, this is all right, this is not all right. That's really not what they're trying to do. They're just saying the internet should work the way it's worked until now. And everyone's information should be treated equally. That's not a really strong regulation. You know, it's not like you start enacting 10 million different laws and deciding who can do what, where, when, and how.
You just want it in this one specific issue. Yes, go ahead, Miriam.
I want to agree with Patrick. Part of it is because I'm Canadian and French as well. But look, the reality is this, okay? If you have the carriers and the cable providers, the internet providers, should be dumb pipes, right? And as that makes them utilities instantly, right? So if the FCC should have the power to slap them on the wrist if they start slowing down Skype traffic or slowing down Netflix because they have invested interest some other place. And that's exactly what I mean, what I think about when I think of regulation. It's not so much saying, you know, we're going to control the internet. It's more like if you mess with this, we're going to mess with you back because we don't think you're taking into account the betterment of the U.S. people.
Yeah, but you both come from socialist countries.
It's very important.
Let's get Denise on because I have one question. Hi, Denise Howell. Thanks for joining us, host of This Week in Law.
You're welcome. Hello.
I appreciate you doing this on short notice. My first question is why doesn't the FCC simply declare broadband providers common carriers and then say, and by the way, these are the rules?
Well,
The common answer to that question is that it would be really, really politically difficult to on the FCC if they did that.
Okay.
That they would face a lot of opposition on that front. There is a perception.
What are the implications? What happens if they're a common carrier? Why is that tough?
Well, some people think that there's a lot more onerous regulation that will follow given that definition.
So there's the camel's nose under the tent.
Right.
Yeah.
And some people think, no, that, you know, the FCC can do plenty under the other designation and it really doesn't make much difference. So, you know, people say that it's a political decision, that designation. Personally, I have a hard time thinking information service, telecommunication service. How do you call the internet or broadband services is what we're talking about here? Either one. You know, I mean, I just have a really hard time getting my head around that and putting it into either one of those boxes.
If they're a common carrier, that means that, like the phone company, they're not responsible for the data that goes over the line. That, you know, you can't go sue the phone company because somebody plotted on a telephone call to do something. It's not their fault. They're a common carrier. It seems to me the internet should be a common carrier. I don't see why AT&T would even want responsibility for the bits that go over their internet.
I mean, you know, very much Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act is a huge umbrella.
Yeah.
Right. Is a huge umbrella for all kinds of unlawful activity that ISPs could otherwise be held responsible
for. So who doesn't want them to be called common carriers?
I believe it's the telco industry in general.
They themselves don't want to be classified that way.
No, they don't.
Well, because they'd lose. They didn't have to be net neutral.
Because they own media companies.
Right.
Because if they were classified as common carriers, they couldn't do that deal that we've been hearing about, where they will ask certain services. To pay for the bandwidth, that was actually a great conversation on This Week in Law, which I listened earlier, and there were excellent points on both sides of the debate. But it seems very clear that the only reason that these telcos would not want to be classified as common carriers is that they want to treat different types of data differently.
They extract
more money out of it.
They don't want net neutrality. They want to do like AT&T is doing with its sponsored data plan. They want to say to Netflix, you know, if you was to give us some extra money, we could tell our customers that you don't cost anything and they'd use you more, and say to YouTube or Twit, by the way, you didn't give us any money, so you're going to cost more for the customers. That's exactly what we're afraid of happening.
Right. But I got to say, I mean, I've always been a huge advocate of net neutrality, and I've always been sort of viscerally drawn to the concept that we need regulation to make sure that those deals don't happen. But having, you know, had the discussion that we had on Twill this week and having gone through a bit of the D.C. Circuit's decision and reasoning on this, There is something to be said for letting the market make a bit of the decisions on this.
Is that what Judge Tittel was proposing?
Yes, that's definitely there was a huge emphasis on, you know, what you can do, FCC, you know, under your mandate and authority. Less a question of, you know, laissez-faire, what is the market going to do as far as the court is concerned? But that's the impact, right? That we now have some opportunity to let this play out. And yes, I am concerned that networks like ours or you know, I mean, ours is pretty well established, even more fringe kinds of startups will be impacted by these sort of sponsored data deals. But the only way that winds up having a really detrimental impact is if people jump on board and say, oh yeah, all I need is who's in the sponsored data plan, and I don't want access to the full internet. You know, it's really going to be consumer demand that drives this. And Leo, do you really think that people are going to turn their back on having full internet access? I mean, don't you think that people have been conditioned now that they want access to whatever they want on the web?
I think it influences people's decisions. People are economic entities. And I think that if you as a user know that you could watch videos on Netflix and it won't go against your data cap or cost you money, but mm-hmm. that if you watch the same video on another service, it will, you're going to choose Netflix every time. Now, right. whether well, people will watch Twit is not, and I've said this last week, I don't think it affects Twit particularly, but it very well might affect new companies coming into the business who would have to make that calculation. Gosh, if I'm not willing to pay AT&T for sponsored access, am I going to be disadvantaged? And a new company might very well be.
Yeah. You have to pay AT&T, and then you have to pay Verizon and you right. know all of them.
Right. I can guarantee you I'm never paying nobody for nothing.
I do think that there's yes. plenty
well, no, that's
of opportunity.
You're already paying for it, Leo. You're already paying
right,
for your
double
bandwidth.
Dipping. I agree.
That yeah. if it winds up being a problem, there's plenty of opportunity, and the court gave the FCC a roadmap for right. how it can right. write net neutrality rules right. that will be enforceable. And if it wound up being problematic and fringe players were being edged out, then you know, I think that the FCC
that's
would
the key.
Step in.
So I think the court would – that's why I don't feel like it's such – did you read Neil Eye's article, Denise?
I haven't yet, no, and I'm glad to know that he looked at this in depth.
He felt like it was a much
great.
More negative thing than I feel like you thought it was, your mm-hmm. panel thought it was on Twitter, or and I think it was, which is mm-hmm. they gave him a roadmap. They said, look, if you want to enforce this, you can. This is how. Or maybe it's up to us writing to Congress and saying Congress needs to either empower the FCC to do this or write its own regulations. So you think that it's prudent just to say, let's wait and see if this becomes a problem and then act?
I do. I think this is a wait and see. And also that there could actually be some beneficial aspects to this. That first of all,
really?
One thing to bear in mind. Yeah, I think so. One thing to bear in mind is that wireless and wired are already treated differently as far mm-hmm. as the FCC's authority to right. to impose
and,
net neutrality
and for good
limits.
Reason I think for good economic reason
right
they're done the technology is very different
right so wireless is already sort of right. the wild wild west as right. far as what the telcos can do, and you notice that AT&T announced their sponsored data plan at CES before this decision ever came out.
Right. They knew that so, they could
but,
get,
but
they
I want
could
I want to jump in here because this is I mean wireless is the stuff I know the best, and I think there is, you're right. I mean, on one hand, and this is why I'm not too freaked out about this, is net neutrality has never really officially existed on wireless. So, and it doesn't seem to be a huge issue, right? I mean, obviously, there are many issues with wireless carriers right now. I'd like them to all be dumb pipes, and I'd like, you know, the prices to go down significantly, and that's not been the case. But there's a big, 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 huge difference between internet service providers that are wired, like Comcast or even AT&T, which provides, you know, fiber and DSL, to the wireless companies, because even though they're the one and the same in many cases, the wireless spectrum belongs to the U.S. people. Okay, let's never forget
that
the FCC's job is to regulate that. And mm-hmm. I don't like the fact that the FCC has no way to enforce anything.
That's a very good point.
And that is my problem. And I think that this just reinforces the fact that the FCC is worthless in the U.S.
Well, you make such a good point, because this is our airwaves that the wireless providers are using. And it is absolutely FCC regulated. They auction the airwaves off. They give people right. the right to use it. That's a why
and
couldn't the FCC
this,
approach the, it that way, Denise? At least with the wireless
mile,
carriers.
The last mile for many people who are on, you know, like ISP level, like who get internet to their house, is often wireless nowadays.
Yeah.
So it means it uses these FCC's spectrum.
Very good point.
And so,
right.
like, this is my whole argument about this.
Yeah, and I think, you know, going forward, certainly wireless is the way things will be and that people want things to be.
Right.
You know, wired is very, very important. Wired is libraries and businesses and homes and schools as we sit here today. And that's a huge chunk. But as we move forward, all of those established wired internet access points are going to move more toward wireless. And I think that's, you know, something I am not the person to sit here and try and explain the FCC's authority and mandate. That's not something that's very much in my wheelhouse. And I encourage people to go check out our last episode of This Week in Law, where we had two very good law professors on this point. They didn't really address, I got to say, that particular issue. But they are people who would be much more able to address that than I am. But I do think it's a good point that, you know, the FCC's authority is certainly fluid. And that's why this decision has been so up in the air for so long. And you know, until the case was argued, it wasn't really clear how this particular federal court was going to rule on it. I mean, it's kind of an open question.
Will there be an appeal? Will the FCC go to the Supreme Court on this?
It's possible, but there hasn't been any statement by the chairman that that's going
to
happen.
And there's no guarantee how this would come down. It seems to me that the rule of law that the appeals court argued is pretty clear. And I would guess the Supreme Court would not overturn, would not review it, would just say.
You never know what
you never know,
the Supreme Court thinks it's an important enough issue and that the district court has trod all over the authority of the FCC or that that's even a possibility, they may well take it up.
Denise Howell, the host of This Week in Law, do listen to Friday's episode for much more on this subject. It is a great subject. I'm so glad we could get you on short notice. Thank you, Denise.
Me too. Thanks, you guys. Yeah. Have a great show.
Appreciate it. Take care.
Bye.
Meanwhile, the World Wrestling, what do you call it? WWE. What does that stand for? World Wrestling Entertainment announced at CES. Watch out, Netflix. We're going to stream for $10 a month, unlimited wrestling on demand. they're doing it with peering arrangements. So they're avoiding this whole issue, which is kind of interesting. But I just think it's so technical and so interesting. But I did want to really kind of at least say, it may not be the end of the world, folks. That despite all these headlines, net neutrality is dead. I think it's far from. It's not dead yet.
That's a point that that This Week in Law makes very well. There are certainly other ways if things go bad, the FCC could correct the course in other ways. But you know, it's still there's no. I'm going to launch back into the thing. So that's
well, but I think we have to defend the internet. We all agree you have to defend the internet.
Exactly. Yes. And that's the thing. There's no good comes out of the service providers being able to treat bits differently. No good at all.
Right. I agree.
There's no upside. So that's what upsets me the most.
I think Denise brought some really interesting perspective into the discussion. And I think to me, it's like, because right now wireless is not net neutral, like there's no regulation on that on wireless, I'm not too concerned that they've upheld this on wired. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think it's going to change too much. Like, I'm not alarmist about it, but I think it's kind of a wait and see attitude for me. What I do wish though, and it bothers me that this ruling happened the way it did, is that the FCC, like from years and years ago now, just doesn't have any power in this country. And this goes back to what Patrick was talking about, you know, should the government have that power, right? I think it should if it owns the airwaves, right? If the people own the airwaves, then the government should
you
have
make
that
such
power.
A good, that was such it's, a good point, and I'm really glad you made that point. That's the thing.
If not the FCC, who is the representative of the people and the government, then who is going to say what you can do with them? If you don't want the FCC to do it, then sure, no one's ever going to say anything about it.
I think anybody who has lived in America for any length of time knows that it is not the government that gets to decide these things, but commercial interests, that politics are absolutely a balancing of the commercial interests. Yeah. If you talk to somebody
fine, by the way. I don't want people to think that I'm this weird, you know, communist monster. I think it works out fine in many ways. It's just that in some specific instances, the free market can go askew a little bit.
I absolutely agree, and there are some very clear places where government regulation, you know, and antitrust law, and I think, frankly, internet neutrality is one of them. Anyway, good discussion. Listen to that This Week in Law. Really fabulous. We're going to take a break. Coming up, some interesting things this week. In fact, Amazon says it's going to announce a product that's bigger than the Kindle. I will ask you guys, give you a chance to think about it, and I will ask you guys, guy and gal, what do you think? What could possibly be bigger than the Kindle? Before we do that, though, let's see what Mike Elgin is planning in the week ahead. Mike?
It's a big week for earnings reports. IBM and Verizon have a call on Tuesday, eBay and Netflix on Wednesday, Microsoft and Nokia on Thursday, and Samsung on Friday. The North American Bitcoin Conference starts Saturday in Miami, Florida, and yes, attendees can pay for their registration using Bitcoin. Back to you, Leo.
How much Bitcoin do you have, Patrick Beja?
I have about 0.00 Bitcoin.
How about you, Miriam? How much Bitcoin do you have?
I missed that boat.
I have seven.
I don't have seven. Wow.
Seven.
That's not
because
bad.
We put on the front page of the Twit website, donate via Bitcoin, and people have generously donated seven Bitcoins. And I'm just going to hold them until they're worth $40,000 each. Then I'm retiring.
That's really smart. I'm going to put that up on my blog too.
Yeah.
Because that's the best way to get them, because you don't have to really worry about all this
and
stuff.
And by the way, it's absolutely impossible at this point to do any Bitcoin mining. I mean, it's just gotten out of control. You have to have a huge amount of power. I read an article. There was an article, was it in the New York Times, about a guy that does this. It's all he does. His whole house is taken over with cooling, you know, and big ASIC computers. And I mean, it's crazy. Crazy. Is that him?
And it's probably costing him more in electricity than he's the amount of Bitcoins he's getting.
Oh, yeah. He's basically crazy speculation. Was that the article? Maybe. Okay. Maybe it was Bloomberg Business Week. Yeah, I think it was. Oh, yeah, it was. You know why? Because it was written by Ashley and Brad. And we had Brad on, and that's right. That's why I noticed it. crazy stuff. We'll talk about that and a lot more. And what is Amazon up to? But first, a word from my favorite place for audio entertainment. No, it's not twit.tv, although that's pretty good. It's audible.com, the best bookstore of audiobooks. It is such a lifesaver. I'm such a huge fan of audible.com. I first discovered them when I was commuting to San Francisco, spending 2 and 3 hours a day in the car going to Tech TV. And Audible kept me from, really, probably kept, saved my life, probably kept me from road rage, from crashes, from falling asleep. I have listened to over 500 books on Audible, and I can so heartily recommend Audible.com. The Brad Stone book I just mentioned, The Everything Store, that's what I'm listening to right now. Really interesting book about Amazon, about Jeff Bezos. Did you know Jeff Bezos' biological father was a circus performer, the number one unicyclist in all of New Mexico?
That explains everything.
It does. It does. But it's also a good business book. It talks about all the decisions that Bezos made all along. Look, here's why I'm mentioning this. First of all, obviously Audible's a sponsor, but if you go to audible.com/twit2, you can buy free two books. It's not buying, is it? You can get two books for free. What we're going to basically do is set you up with a platinum account. That's two books a month, but the first 30 days are free. Pay nothing in the first 30 days. Cancel at any time. Those two books will be yours to keep. The Everything Store would be a great one to start with. My next listen, I think, is going to be Dogfight, Fred Vogelstein's book about Google and Apple. If you're interested in tech, there has been in the last year a spate of great books, Hatching Twitter from Nick Bilton, Leander Connie's Johnny Ive book. But there's all sorts of stuff. There's fiction, there's nonfiction, there's science fiction. Really is no limit to the kinds of audio entertainment you can get. In fact, frankly, at this point, if a new book comes out, it's going to not only come out in paper in a bookstore, but it's going to come out on audible.com, which is really, really fun. I haven't read this, but the chat room saying I should read Robert Gates' memoir, Duty, which just came out, talks about his experience as Secretary of Defense for both George Bush and Barack Obama. Should be very interesting. I'll put that on my list, too. There's nothing like, I love this on the upper right here on my page, 2 credits available. I love that feeling because I also have a platinum account. 2 credits a month, and man, I just, what am I going to listen to next? What am I going to listen to next? I want you to get those 2 credits for yourself, audible.com/twit2, and do a little listening at Audible. I think you're gonna like it, but you know what? If you don't, no big deal. Cancel in the first 30 days. You'll pay nothing. They're scary books, too. Look at this. This would be a young adult. Hollow City. Mrs. Peregrine's Peculiar Children. if you've got a teenager or a young adult at home, it's a great way to get them into reading. Audible.com/twit2. Thank you, Audible, for your support. So Amazon's got an event. Are you either of you? No, you're not going to either of you going to the Amazon event. I'm not going to the Amazon event. But they say it's some big announcement.
12-inch Kindle.
No, they did that already, didn't they?
Oh, the DX was 10-inch, wasn't it?
And they killed it. Oh, it was too small. Huh?
I don't know. I mean, okay, 15-inch Kindle.
That's a little bit too big.
I think it could be a smartphone.
You think?
Possible.
So this is coming up Thursday. Wait a minute. No, that's the old one. When is the announcement? I have to find it. I think it's coming up in the next week or so. They say the guy, they said it's going to be bigger than the Kindle. I'm waiting for this announcement, the smartphone announcement. Don't you think that they could do a free smartphone or a very, very cheap smartphone?
Oh, yeah. This has been a long-lasting theory of mine.
And Bezos is certainly ambitious enough. January 30th, that's the date. So we got a little time. It's called the V1 product. It'll be in Boston. Huh. It's from the KNI team, the Kindle New Initiatives team. What if it were a Kindle phone?
Kindle watch. Just kidding. So a Kindle phone, I've had this theory that they could use WhisperNet to provide basically a free phone, like, you know,
right,
almost free.
Right.
Like you're subsidized. But then again, it brings up this whole net neutrality discussion we had, because my theory would be that they do this, but that you don't buy, like, you can buy more, right? In the same way as you can buy more with Kindle right now. So, and the way you buy it is subscriptions. You're like, I want all the books I can eat. So it's like $5.99 or $9.99 a month, right? And then you add, like, it gives you basic data, you know, very simple, like 100 megs free or whatever, like Google does and T-Mobile does on their tablets. But then, you know, you basically don't pay for data amounts. You pay for, like, features. Do you want Amazon Video? You pay $5. So that's, I think, what I see them doing. Because and unfortunately, that goes against all the things we want, as, you know, keeping things net neutral. And if anybody's going to destroy net neutrality, it's definitely Jeff Bezos, right? I mean,
no, Jeff's a good guy.
I know Jeff's a good guy. I like Jeff. I'm just saying that I could see him doing it. Like, I could see him finding a way to make it work. And then it sets an example that we don't really want to have.
Well, they're in a unique position. And, you know, you compare this to Apple. Amazon said, Bezos said, we don't have to make money on the Kindle. We make money when you use the Kindle, which is very difficult for a company like Apple to compete against. They have to make money on the iPad on every sale. There's no, you know, they make a little money afterwards on the iTunes store, but nothing like Amazon could make. And they could do the same. I think they could do the same thing with the phone. It'd be probably an Android phone with a Amazon unique skinning, as they do with the Kindle, because that's Android. That avoids the cost of the operating system. They could probably make it fairly cheaply. And if it's a gateway to purchases on Amazon, and by the way, I mean, it's not just books anymore. It's movies. It's TV shows. Amazon streaming is fantastic.
So I can see
how about
a deal
they
where,
give you a phone with your Prime subscription.
Perfect example.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Perfect example.
If you want the unlimited internet, you pay more.
Yeah.
Because by default, this is a window into Amazon's ecosystem. So when you get the phone, you get phone calls, you get texts, and you get, you know, access to maybe, you know, some basic internet stuff, and then you mostly get access to all the Amazon stuff.
Right.
I don't see them giving away the internet for free.
No, but they, as you said, with WhisperNet, to people who don't know what that is, your Kindle is automatically forever online. I think it's Sprint they're using, right?
Not anymore. I think it's AT&T.
Oh, it's now AT&T. Okay. And so you get, you know, there's a crappy browser. It's not like you could really use it for internet access, but you do get kind of.
Yeah, remember, You were talking about Kindle OS, which is on the Kindle Fire, but WhisperNet is essentially
only
the syncing service
for
the e-reader. Exactly.
Right, right.
So it's not like you get the internet for free on your Kindle Fire. It's really just to...
No, but you do.
It's
because
to sync.
Do they have the LTE one? The XC doesn't have free data. And then if you pay more, you get...
A few hundred megabytes, something like that. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I call it WhisperNet, but to me, WhisperNet is anything that gives you basically free data to kind of hook you in.
And of course, who's going to carry it? T-Mobile.
I don't know. I think they have enough of a deal with AT&T right now. I'd be surprised to see them changing it.
All right. And you know what?
In fact, here's my theory.
Okay.
You would never know which carrier they use. If Amazon does it right.
That's right.
If Bezos does it right, this is an Amazon ecosystem, integrated thing. You don't even know, and they can change a carrier anytime they want because they don't care. They want you to pay Amazon or part of your Prime subscription or whatever.
Yeah.
And here's my theory. If it succeeds, you'll see Apple do the same thing. What you'll see is Apple will walk to AT&T and Verizon with $10 billion in cash and say, here, give us all the data you can give us. And basically support all this network-wise, and we will sell iPhones and iPads and other devices at the Apple Store that people pay through iTunes to get connectivity to the internet. And then what's going to happen is if that's successful, if AT&T or Verizon makes money with this, I think it'd be AT&T, by the way. Then they're going to say to Verizon, here's $10 billion. We also want you to be a provider. And we'll automatically switch based on what the signal is best. And then they'll talk to international carriers. And then you'll be able to use your iPhone and iPad anywhere.
Yeah.
And
are you fantasizing now? This is fantasy.
I've been thinking about this for a long, long time. I've talked about this on many podcasts. It's very possible. And we need a spark, and the spark is Amazon doing it and doing it right. And if you have that, then basically what happens, the carrier really becomes a dumb pipe because Apple, you pay Apple for your data service. And whether you pay per megabyte, I'm not sure we want that either.
But
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that I can see this happening because then Apple has full control over the user experience, right?
Yeah.
Because then when you go to Europe, your phone just works.
Wow.
You don't have to do anything. It picks the best carrier. And then at the time, wherever you are, and you've paid for this as part of your iTunes subscription.
I don't think people going to Europe is a big enough problem for Apple to solve that they will need to go in to enter that incredibly complex.
I don't know. I think all these companies understand that international is the next frontier.
Look, T-Mobile gave away international edge to everyone.
Loved it. It's only edge, but it's something. And it makes me, that's the phone I'm carrying. I'm never again paying AT&T for international roaming.
Sure, but the answer is to reduce the roaming costs, which are ridiculously inflated.
Isn't that happening now in the EU? Am I wrong, Patrick?
Yeah. No, you're right. We're the EU, one of the examples of regulation being positive. The EU is imposing on phone service providers all over Europe to ultimately, in a few years, they won't be able to charge for roaming more than they do in their local country. Because
so basically, the EU will be one big region, and you can use any carrier in the EU.
But you see, you're missing the point, Patrick. There's no roaming with what I'm talking about. There's agreement with each carrier in each country. So your SIM or whatever is
the reason you need it now. But the reason you need it now, Miriam, is that the roaming charges are really expensive.
Oh, that's terrible.
So if you get the roaming charges down to a reasonable level, then you don't need that.
I thought that was happening this month. So it's a slow rollout.
It's a slow rollout.
Okay.
And ultimately I'm not sure, so I'm not going to say anything. But ultimately, you'll be able to subscribe to any phone service provider from Europe, from any other country in Europe. And that's a very good example of the industry not being regulated for so long for, good reason. There's historical reasons for that. But the incumbents establishing prices, incredibly high prices wherever they could, and getting away with it because there was no regulation.
The only reason I might not agree with you, Miriam, is that Amazon has had historically not been very good internationally.
But Amazon would not do the international thing. Amazon would be the spark that would get Apple or Google to do this big. That's what I'm saying. It'd be successful enough that they'd be looking at it and go, we want an integrated vertical experience for our customer that does not involve a carrier anymore.
You want a crazy Amazon story. They have just patented the idea of shipping items before the customer orders them.
I saw that.
That's an interesting
one. They know that they have enough data about what you buy on Amazon that they know that you're likely to buy something. And so what they do is they pre-ship it to the nearest fulfillment center on the off chance you do order it. And that way they'll get it to you faster.
You before you even order it.
No, like, no, you don't get it. Although that would be very interesting if you got it ahead of
time.
There was a
funny video about a guy who made it was Amazon tomorrow or Amazon yesterday that would send you the thing you were going to order on the next
day. If you read this book, and I know I keep plugging this book, but if you read this book, it becomes very clear that Bezos understands what Amazon's advantages and disadvantages are. And the big disadvantage that they have over brick and mortar stores is it takes a while, you know, it takes a day to get the product at least. And so if they could get it to you same day, that's why they're thinking about drones. That's not a stretch for them because they really want that product to be in your hand as fast as a brick and mortar store can do it.
So how about, I'm going to use a sports metaphor here and show you how sporty I am. How about they come out of left field and announce a TV? Was that an appropriate
An Amazon TV?
A Kindle TV of some kind with because you know they're pushing a lot with the Kindle the Amazon Prime original video content. We would have heard about, you know, there would have been leaks if something like that was going to happen, but maybe
You know, the Boston Globe says no, it's just a hiring event. They're going to announce anything. So we'll move on. We'll see. January 30th, that'll be the announcement. We shall see what comes up. Let's take a break. When we come back, a little bit more, we'll wrap it up. The first massively online master's degree program in computer science. We could talk about the Target malware. The history, you know, there's a big 30th anniversary this week. We'll talk about that more in just a bit. Our guests, the only two people who are not following Gridiron, Patrick Beja from France and Miriam Joar from wherever she lives. It's magic land.
But San Francisco.
Close enough. That land where all phones will someday be free.
The land of milk and honey. I call it the land of milk and honey.
I like it. From the land of milk and honey, Miriam Joar. We are talking today about Carbonite Online Backup. I tell you, if you are, you know, tax time's coming, and I bet you have all your financial records on your hard drive. Just think what's on your hard drive these days. Your whole life is there. If it were to die, would you die? Yeah. You know, and if you're a small business, you might be out of business. Sure, you're backing it up next to your computer, but what if there's a fire, a flood, a tsunami? That could be even worse. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs your files up to the cloud automatically. Continually, whenever you're online, you can access those files anywhere. Just log on to your Carbonite account on any computer or use their free apps. You can even email files to one another. Start your free trial right now. Carbonite.com. You don't need a credit card. And if you decide to buy, you'll get 2 months free with purchase. It's as little as $59.99 a year for everything on your Mac or your PC. They have bigger plans for big business, small business, external drives. Just visit Carbonite.com. Pick your plan. Use our offer code TWIT. You get 2 free bonus months with purchase. No credit card required to try it for 2 weeks free. Carbonite Online Backup. We thank them so much for their support of this week in tech. Is it a big deal that Spotify... Now, see, here's Spotify web streaming has always been free, but I think globally now, Patrick, it's free, right?
On the web, it's always been free.
It has
to
been.
An extent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're competing with the big thing there is the rise of services like RDO and
RDO says Pandora now it's free on the web for all US users. That's a big deal, right?
So Yeah, they've had to change a lot of things to compete with these new services, which is probably good for the consumer, but I don't think it's a huge deal.
Might be bad for musicians, though. God, it can't be any money now in these businesses.
Yeah.
I don't understand how it works. AOL has finally called it quits on Patch. This was a local news service that Tim Armstrong, the CEO of AOL, really doubled down on local news with Patch. And after spending more than $300 million over the last 6 years, they finally just said,
so you know what's really sad?
What?
I used to work at AOL since they own Engadget.
Oh, that's right.
And I never heard about it until I read
You never
about
knew
this
about
today.
Patch?
No.
That's a bad sign.
That tells you how successful this product was.
That's a very...
Well, the idea wasn't bad, right?
No.
For those who don't know, Patch was basically
might be an execution
a series
issue.
Of... of bloggers creating very local content. It was a try to crack the, I guess, a way of going at the hyper-local information that everyone's been talking about. Unfortunately, it's not working. But I think if we had looked at it a few years ago and had been asked to evaluate it, I think we might have thought it could have worked. It wasn't a bad idea per se.
Yeah. The idea sounds good to me, but,
obviously,
we never heard of it.
Lots of good ideas of money, in the world. Yeah. AOL also selling Winamp and Shoutcast. They were going to shut the service down, but along comes Belgian company Radionomy, and they bought it for somewhere between $5 and $10 million. And this might be bad for Radionomy. AOL takes a 12% stake in Radionomy. Ooh.
I'm not sure what they're going to do with Winamp.
Radionomy, I think they were more interested in Shoutcast because they already are an internet radio play, right? And Shoutcast is great. And there's a whole directory and lots of Shoutcast stations. I'm really glad they saved that. Winamp, I don't care, but I'm really glad they saved Shoutcast.
For sure.
Big, big departure, probably a firing at Yahoo. When Marissa Mayer took over, she brought over a number two from Google, Enrique De Castro, to poached him from Google to run their ad sales. Paid him, we believe, more than she got paid herself, $40 million a year or something like that. No, I guess $40 million is his severance. Yikes.
Wow.
Yikes. The beginning of a new year, writes Marissa Mayer. By the way, of course, Kara Swisher has the memo. The beginning of the new year always provides time for reflection. And upon reflection, you're fired. No, as we enter 2014, I couldn't be more proud of what we've accomplished. But during my own reflection, I made the difficult decision that our chief operating officer, Enrique De Castro, should leave the company. She put that in a memo.
Wow.
That's harsh. Usually they say, Mr. De Castro wants to spend more time with his family. We wish him the best of luck.
Apparently, there was a lot of people who were waiting for this to happen. He was not very well liked in the company. So I think it might have been an admission that she had to do. She had protected him for a long time. And ultimately, she wanted to say mea culpa, kind of.
Oh, yeah. We didn't work out. He will walk away with somewhere between $88 and $109 million. It's a good gig
not
for
a, bad deal.
A year and a half.
Yeah.
According to the Times, the New York Times, he was the eighth highest paid executive in Silicon Valley for 2012. Marissa Mayer herself received $36.6 million a year. That seems okay. I would take it. But De Castro got $39 million a year. And then he's going to get the severance.
What's a million here and there, Leo? Right? It's the Silicon Valley. What do you want? Come on.
Apparently, it never worked out. It just was never a good relationship. Wow. $39 million a year.
I
and
know,
then
it's crazy, right?
A $40 million severance package.
Jesus.
Yeah.
What's 1 year salary? You can go to the Bahamas for a year.
Right. Bahamas, you could live for the rest of your life in Mexico, hacienda, couple of servants, or go to, where was it that John McAfee went, and just hang out there, make bath salts?
Bermuda, was it?
Belize, I think.
No.
Belize? By the way, McAfee says he's very happy that Intel has dropped the name McAfee from its antivirus.
I think he used a slightly more colorful description.
Yes.
I think he said something like, has finally liberated me from the...
he basically says it's the worst software in the world. The company is going to call it Intel Security. McAfee said, quote, I am now everlastingly grateful to Intel for freeing me from this terrible association with the worst software on the planet.
Oh.
He's not far wrong. There may be worse. I don't know.
We need to get John McAfee and John Ledger in one room.
Crazy.
That would be pretty awesome.
Crazy. And then I guess we'll wrap it up with this kind of tip of the hat to Sandra Day O'Connor. She saved the VCR on this week 30 years ago. You remember, maybe you don't, you're probably young. It was on Friday that the Betamax case was finally decided. The movie companies, the Motion Picture Association, took Sony to court. I think it was the current head of the MPAA at the time who told Congress that the VCR was to the movie industry what the Boston Strangler was to women home alone. They sued. Yeah, that's harsh rhetoric. Thank you, Jack Valenti. They sued saying you got to kill video cassette recording. It's going to put us out of business. Sandra Day O'Connor was the swing vote. At first, according to archival files, she was, this is the Washington Post writing, inclined to side with the studios along with their Supreme Court majority. But she grappled with the majority opinion so much so she wound up defecting and supporting the dissent, a 5-4 decision against the Motion Picture Association in favor of it. The VCR was born. And of course, as is always the case, the motion picture industry made billions off the VCR. And in the hindsight, it was the stupidest lawsuit ever.
It was all about porn.
Says what you say. I don't know.
Technology. That's always just how it's decided,
always about,
right?
Porn, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much for taking some time from your football day. Miriam Joire is, of course, at social media marketing? What do you do at getpebble.com?
I'm the product evangelist officially.
Ooh,
that really just means that I head communications and strategy on the product.
She's Tank Girl, no vowels on the Twitter, TNKGRL. And you know what?
It's also my blog, by the way.
Old habits die hard, and Miriam still covers the mobile world and the tech world with great verve and intelligence. TNKGRL.com, and you can read all about it. Tank Girl Mobile. Thank you, Miriam, for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Leo.
Patrick Beja is at patrickbeja.com.
I am.
And not Patrick on the Twitter.
Exactly.
Which we'll never quite get, but.
Well, Patrick was taken, so.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I think it worked out.
But you are Patrick. It's a little
not
confusing.
People.
Slightly.
There are a few not people on Twitter now.
There's quite a few. Anything you want to plug? What do you want to plug?
So I guess there are a couple of things. First, very quickly, my French tech news show, which is Le Rendez-vous Tech, because there were a couple of people. It was weird this week. A couple of English-speaking people told me that they were brushing up on their French listening to the show. And since it's, you know, a familiar subject matter, it can be pretty useful. So if that's your case, please feel free.
Is the French of Le Rendez-vous Tech perfect French? Is it the kind of French I should emulate? Parisian French?
Yes. I'm going to go with yes. Le rendez-vous tech.
Am I saying that right? Le rendez-vous tech.
Le rendez-vous tech.
Exactly.
What is the word for tech in French?
Tech.
You know, it's like that awesome quote. I can't remember who said it, but some American CEO said the problem with France is that they have no word for entrepreneur.
Oh,
which of course is a French word.
So, yeah, what does entrepreneur mean in France, though?
Oh, the same thing.
Someone who starts
startup
guy. Yeah,
and so the other thing is.
Say again?
Sorry?
Involves more mistresses.
Yes.
And the other thing is my brother's royalty-free music shop called Music in Cloud.
Yes.
Which is really cool. And he's doing it with his wife. It's a real mom-and-pop shop. And it's he's very talented. So you should go check it out if you have royalty-free music needs.
What's the address?
Musicincloud.com.
There is no definite article.
There is absolutely no definite article.
It's by Daniel Beja. That's cool. Royalty free music. I like that. And podcasters especially would get some value out of this.
And he's got some pretty cool stuff there. So check it out.
Thank you guys and gals. Thank you for being here. Thank you all for joining us. I hope you didn't get disturbed by our early start. We wanted to get everybody out of here in time to watch a football game. But normally we do Twit Sunday afternoons, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 2300 UTC on twit.tv if you'd like to watch live, and we will be at our regular time next week. Although I'm thinking, and maybe I'd love to get some feedback, maybe we should, why should we wait an hour between the radio show and Twit? Why shouldn't we just get Twit right underway? Why is that hour even there?
For you to brush your teeth.
Yes, that's very much a part of my ritual before every show. Dental hygiene is so important.
Yeah, as someone who lives in France, I would
earlier
say that
is better.
You should not.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Earlier is better, right? we also make on-demand audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv, where currently all bits are created equal, at least for the time being. So if you can't watch live, do watch after the fact. Don't forget TNT all week long, 10 a.m. Pacific. That would be 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC for your daily tech news. And now our new show, TN2, our evening version. Tech News Tonight, that's 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. 4 plus 12 is 16, plus 8 is 24. Right at midnight UTC, your last gasp of news at the end of the day. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Another Twit.
This is amazing.